And now, Lab Radio, sponsored by Coinstructive.
Good to go.
Okay, so, my name is Hans Lombardo. I'm the editor at altcoinsnews.com. I'm also a partner in a regulatory Bitcoin and blockchain regulatory site called MerkleTree.io, and where that sort of mission of that site is to, you know, provide information on the regulatory environment in every country on the planet. The thing is, why I got interested in Bitcoin is it's still very true today. Is that it's just so multifaceted technology. There's so many things you can do with the technology, payment wise. You can use it, as a registry. At the same time, it has, it's sort of designed to be kind of like gold, like a mineral, in the way, there's only so many Bitcoins that can ever be created. It's creation of Bitcoin is getting slower and slower. So, there's going to be greater value to it. I think what's also great about the technology is that it can help, like we talked about in the panel, it can help cultures that don't have banking develop sort of banking systems online or over mobile systems. And I think that's fantastic. For example, in Kenya, cross-border payments. What else is there?
Just the transferring of money, like in China, them going gambling, and they can kind of eliminate the money exchanging. It's kind of an annoyance to carry that money with them. They can just put it in Bitcoin. They go to Vegas. They get their dollars out of the Bitcoin ATM.
Right.
And then they can put their money back and then go back home. So that's really nifty. Yeah. That's a real use case.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. Very true. And in general, to transfer capital in China, there's a lot of, they call it capital flight out of China. But, and they're using Bitcoin to do it, but in a sense, it's just trying to get their capital in places where they're going to earn more interest.
Mm.
So, like in China right now, the economy is kind of slowing down a bit, so people want to transfer their wealth elsewhere without government scrutiny. So, Bitcoin, in a way, is helpful.
Wow. So, well, let's take a step back. What is your definition of Bitcoin?
It's like I define Bitcoin, and it's just sort of duality to it, as a payment system, a payment technology, but also it is like gold. So it's like digital gold or digital cash. I think it's more than just a currency.
Right.
Because there's only going to be so many Bitcoins created. So a lot of people don't realize that. They don't realize it's finite. You can't just, print more of it.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually it's slowing down every, so many years, the amount of, of Bitcoin created is reduced.
Right, so, right. And then how about the blockchain? I know that's a big piece of Bitcoin. Do you see that as kind of a separate technology, or is it sort of intertwined as well?
Well, I mean, the Bitcoin blockchain itself is linked to the currency.
Right.
But other people are developing other blockchains, and even this Bitcoin blockchain can be used for alternative uses, not necessarily just as a currency. So it's being used to, stamp anything, timestamp. It can be used as sort of a notary. We used to stamp contracts. But there are other blockchains that are being developed that will do that independent of Bitcoin. So I think it's a good thing. It's just shown us what we can do with this sort of technology.
Mm-hmm. What excites you the most about this technology, whether the Bitcoin side or the blockchain side?
I think everything about Bitcoin excites me. In terms of right now as a system, it can be used. Can you imagine, when I was at university, early 90s, if my parents could transfer me money over something system like this, it would have been so many, because I was an expatriate. My parents were overseas, thousands of miles away.
Wow.
So I was going to university in the States. So today, if I send my son to university somewhere in the U.S., I could transfer money so easily with Airbits. If I get him an Airbits wallet, I can I can send him money.
And you can even buy it like right on the spot and then do that if you were like, oh, I don't have any like handy or, you know, if it wasn't on that wallet.
The only thing is though, that wallet, you can buy, if you're in the U.S., you can buy stuff, but you can't overseas.
Right.
So it's still that's one of the problems. I think there's some negative aspects to Bitcoin that we got to make, you know, the sort of industry has to make more user friendly and easier to educate people.
Okay.
So, and easier to adopt.
Right. So those are some sticking points.
Yeah. So like when you start using email, right, it's easy to use email, easy to use the internet browser. But with Bitcoin, it's easy to sign up for Amazon.com, log in, put your credit card details in there, and that's it. But with Bitcoin, it's a bit more complicated, a bit complicated to actually acquire Bitcoin.
Sure, more cumbersome, and it was exponentially so in the earlier days.
So this kind of ties into like the regulation a little bit, right? So being here in San Diego, I work a lot very closely with Airbits. So I hear about things from them. And so, you know, they have Canada too now, right?
Right.
So, and they've been working for months to try to, they actually thought that Europe was going to release before they were going to be able to do the U.S. So, you know, a lot of this comes down to compliance and regulatory and lawyers and getting all your ducks in a row, right? So that you can proceed without as many hiccups. Sure. A lot of these companies don't know what to do, right? They don't know where to go as far as regulation. So how is MerkleTree.io? Is this Merkle.io?
MerkleTree.io.
MerkleTree.io. How are they helping companies to like work through that regulatory and compliance space to help get those things, make those things easier for people to adopt?
So what we're doing is we're trying to provide the intelligence on what is going on in each market, and then we try to advise and connect people to like this regulatory specialist to actually help them, consult them in each market.
So you have specialized consultants for different types of regulatory needs,
right? Like in each country, that's the idea, so that we introduce people, either we provide the regulatory consultant or we find someone who can do that. There's some countries where, you know, they're really early days, the whole regulation issue. So that's what we're, we're in the early days of our sort of development, but that's what we're trying to do. That's what our mission is.
That's great.
Yeah, but like, you know, I'm like looking at Airbits right here, and right, you know, before, like when I'm in the overseas, and it says buy or spend Bitcoin, you don't see this. So like now, like, I mean, this is new.
Yeah.
So, but like before, like when I'm in Hong Kong, I can't get this page.
You don't see the buy sell option.
No.
So it's like geo specific.
Yeah, and like also.
So that sounds like it's a hurdle of Bitcoin adoption, or just it being more pervasive. Because everyone's got different rules, and that has to be teased out by each individual community to really figure it out.
Yeah, that's exactly.
So that's a bottleneck.
That is a bottleneck for Bitcoin.
Nice. Sounds like that'd be something that if you could change, like would that fall into that category? Because like one question I ask is like, what would you change if you could wave your magic wand?
If I could, but it's difficult because even with regular e-commerce, it's different in each country. So like, you go on Amazon, you log in, you may not be able to order stuff because there's like some sort of regional block, licensing block. Yep. Same thing with Apple Store. You name it, iTunes.
Netflix, even.
Yeah. Netflix you can't even get.
Wow.
They're going
to
come out with Netflix.
VPN,
yeah. So, like, they're gonna offer Netflix.
So, let's see, data restriction is what I'm hearing.
There's also licensing issues.
Okay.
So, like, certain content is licensed to maybe another provider in Hong Kong or Asia or whatever, and they control.
Or, like, they don't allow, like, I think there's something like, in China, they only allow X number of Hollywood or American movies in because they want to support their own. It makes sense. That's very China-minded. and I thought, like, how's that going to be with, like, a Netflix? Like, that's going to be very convoluted because those licensing deals seem really crazy. Like, we're streaming your content on demand live. It's not like someone's buying a DVD and that's that. No. You know, it's not a clear sale. Like, it's like you're paying a monthly fee for access to all this stuff. So,
So like, I have iTunes account. I use my a U.S. account, so I can get U.S. programming.
Interesting.
So like my wife and my son, we all can watch all this stuff because Apple's a bit more flexible. They don't like geo-block IPs, but like Google does.
Okay.
So Google Store.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What are some other, you mentioned last some negative aspects of Bitcoin. What are some other elements you've seen that, you know, are not really highlighted? Because we like to be really optimistic in this space, which is awesome. But I think what you're saying is really important because those bottlenecks are growing edges and, frankly, opportunities, right, to some degree.
Absolutely. I think also it's just bad PR. Really, public relations for Bitcoin is terrible. Because if you talk to people, like I was, you know, I got here a couple of days ago, and I went out and was talking to a waiter, and he said, isn't that the way people buy drugs? You know, they use Bitcoin. I was like, no, that's not what Bitcoin. It's like people use fiat currency to buy drugs too.
That's more just, efficient. Yeah. You ever see Breaking Bad, man?
Also, they've done studies and they've shown that actually, you know, the thing about terrorism. They're saying that terrorists use Bitcoin, but they're using fiat currency. They're using bank.
I mean, wouldn't Bitcoin be easier to track theoretically? Yeah, with, you know, like exactly. They were that was the whole thing they were saying about Silk Road is like, well, actually,
that's
they can track them down. So it's like cash is actually
they,
still
all they
the
need
best.
To do is tie a wallet address. To somebody,
it's not got, like
you can get. I was telling people that I was educating people about that. I said, like, basically, I can take your wallet address. I can know everything you bought. I can see that. I just put it into an explorer, a block explorer, and then you can see what that person's doing with that wallet.
So
it's you know that's ridiculous.
So there's some privacy issues that we have yet to figure out where the line's there.
And look at money. The whole money laundering thing is ridiculous. You know, pinning that on Bitcoin, it's ridiculous. If you look at the amount of money laundering, it's like 99% is regular, you know, sort of banking. You know?
Gotcha. So you're saying they're kind of singling out that.
Yeah.
But see, I think they get such a big legal basis from that rule that they're using it to, like, they're grabbing onto it for dear life. But to your point, you're like, well, what about the rest? Like, HSBC with, like, connections to, like, cartels.
Right.
It's like they don't get slapped much.
So look what happened to HSBC and with their Swiss banking operation. I mean, just
what were the details there?
I don't know all the details, but they were caught and they're busted by the U.S. government. You know? So... that's there. That happens. So you can't fault Bitcoin for that. That's just
it's a small market cap right now too. So the reason I feel that there maybe you can touch on this is that there why are they paying so much attention to such a small market cap?
Right.
Right. Because they want to be involved.
Right.
They actually see that now they're like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
This is super important. We need to be involved in this.
Money talks,
right?
Or numbers talk.
It's a combination of the public relations issue. It's covered in the media, so that's why governments are now, like, you know, governments want to go after it. Not only that, it's lack of their control. They don't have control over it. They don't like not having control over something. That's a major issue, I think. And they don't understand it. That's another issue. So they fear it.
Yeah, fear is a big thing. It keeps people from doing things.
Yeah, exactly.
That boils all the way down to consumers.
Right.
So I mean, consumers, they're afraid too, because they're like, well, I don't. I mean, it's just like with anything that you've seen come out over time. The older the people are, the less likely they are to adopt it and use it. And so this is probably going to be a 10 to 20 year process. Everybody thought it was going to be 5 years or less.
You're absolutely right. And I think it's the industry's fault. The industry needs to get better at converting people, you know, make it easier, making less intimidating. I tried to explain how to, you know, just download an Airbits wallet, and it's pretty simple. But, you know, people still, you know, you need to get money into that wallet. It's a problem. It's like you have to go to an ATM or you have to buy it. Like this Cladera thing, which, you know, I sent, you know, you'd send an email, basically fill out a form, you process, and they invite you. I haven't received the invitation yet, but they, that's a step.
You know, it's not like intuitive.
No, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's why I think it's great right now, right? We have a lot of room to grow,
right.
And it's not dead.
Right.
It's lived through all of these hurdles and you know, things that have tried to squash it. And most other business, like if this was a business, would have, after Gox, it would have failed. It would have been done. And so you're looking at the resiliency of something that no one has really permanent control over, right?
Correct.
And it's a tool that no one's ever seen like before in our lifetime. So
that encompasses so much of everything. And we talked a little bit about the negative side, which I think is really great to highlight, but now that's a great sort of framework or baseline for us to now say, well, what are the biggest opportunities for businesses and organizations using this technology and why? And this could include small to medium businesses, nonprofits, all the way up to enterprises.
Well, I mean, I think the biggest opportunity is cost reduction in terms of transferring funds for businesses. That's what I see the number one opportunity. There's a lot of, you know, talk about blockchain, what it can do, a lot of things, including smart contracts, notarization, things like that, which will eliminate costs as well. But I think as just for payments, it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. In terms of transfer funds from A to B. So I see there's huge potential.
How about maybe on a like institutional, like financial services level? Like I read this article where there's like, I guess there's R3, it sounds like a consortium trying to bring together financial players. So that's an interesting angle where it seems like there is some like waking up, like from the financial industry knowing, or at least realizing there's a discussion taking place, and B, that there should be some kind of uniform pathways for everyone to follow.
Yeah.
So how is that also, you know?
I mean, if you look at that R3 project, there's 30 of the biggest banks in the world in that project. And they're looking at building, basically developing standards, what you're talking about, for blockchain and banking and financial markets.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, we're talking about everything. I mean, there are people talking about using it for an entire banking system. There are people, and they're talking about just using it for digital securities.
So right.
Private companies, like, you know, the NASDAQ system that they developed, like pre-IPO companies, can just basically sell company stock, but it was digitally backed stock
mm-hmm.
to people so they can raise funds. That's, you know, and that's what NASDAQ's doing. So like, there are a lot of companies now, like blockchain consultancies, offering that as a service.
Right. To the financial services,
to
like
any,
crowd.
Any company.
Anyone.
Any company that wants to basically issue its own securities, digital sort of private securities.
I think there's like a dream in Bitcoin that like Bitcoin kind of emerges like on its own, but I think it being kind of processed by big banks is actually maybe not a bad thing because they know that business very well. So like that end product, yeah, they might be buggy on like the development side if they're, you know, if they don't invest well in the programming, but I almost feel like they're going to have a lot of pressure to produce a polished product that works at scale.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really interesting solution. And I almost wonder if their solutions will be something that we can then, as a community, pull from and feed back into the actual digital asset, Bitcoin ecosystem, blockchain ecosystem, all altcoins. Because I think that high level polish of like the top players would not be a bad thing to have among digital assets themselves in terms of internally. Because like that would, I think, build trust and some of these bottlenecks you're talking about that might actually help sort of push people over those humps.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I think there's sort of a double-edged sword in some ways because all this movement away from Bitcoin and towards these private blockchains creates some sort of movement away from Bitcoin. But at the same time, it helps the technology.
Right.
It
builds the confidence in it, like where it's almost more like the cloud. Like everyone believes in the cloud. They don't know what it is or how it works, but they're like everyone wants it and has it. So
yeah, but it's funny because there are a lot of Bitcoin companies that sort of stop using the term, actually mentioning Bitcoin.
They just say blockchain. Yeah,
they say blockchain, which I think is, you know, it's silly, but that's what a lot of companies were been doing. There's a lot of criticism, a lot of backlash from the Bitcoin ecosystem against that. which I think is also
it's like you
wrong.
Don't like me anymore.
Yeah.
Do I embarrass you?
Silly. It's like I remember watching an interview of this wallet company called the Case Wallet. The CEO was like being interviewed like on Fox Business News or something. She never mentioned Bitcoin at all in her entire interview. She just talked about using the wallet for digital assets.
Interesting.
I thought that was amusing.
It's happening a lot.
Well, so before we maybe like, you know, we can feel free to continue this chat, but I wanted to maybe get some resources for listeners. You know, you're a small business, you're an enterprise, you're just a curious listener that's new. What are some resources people can look into to learn about this growing space, whether Bitcoin, blockchain, obviously allcoinnews.com.
I'm going to plug that. Allcoinsnews.com. And also MerkleTree.io.
Okay. So, and do you have any other sort of general like resources you go to on a regular basis or
I
Twitter
like,
people?
As
or
a competitor,
blogs?
I like Bitcoin Magazine.
Nice.
I like what they do a lot.
Okay.
Bitcoin is just also, I like those guys. They interviewed me. They were very generous. So I like Bitcoinist as well. But, you know, I think there's nothing wrong with, I mean, going out and looking at all these resources out there. You know, Bitcoin.com, then you guys also, I think blockchain.info, they have lots of information on blockchain.info. That's very useful. I mean, obviously, they're company in the space, but they provide a lot of data that's very useful. Also, Brave New Coin is very good too. They have a lot of sort of market data. There's a company called, also I've been looking at recently, Kaiko.com, K-A-I-K-O.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of similar to Brave New Coin in terms of providing market data.
Mm-hmm.
So,
neat. Yeah. Very cool. And how do we get in touch with you if people want to follow, obviously, your website, but learn more from what you've got going on?
You can go to my website, or you can send me an email at hans@asiatechmedia.com.
Perfect. Did you have anything else to add, Chris?
No.
That's it?
No,
all right, yeah. Cool. Hans,
thanks for being on.
Yeah,
sure.
Thanks for your time. This is
my
great.
Pleasure.
We'll definitely have to get you back, and because it sounds like you're really tapped into the space, so there's so much to talk about. It's one of those things we have to just kind of keep coming back to at a certain amount of time, and there's always something new to talk about.
No,
so,
I have to do it over Skype.
Yeah, I know.
You have to come to Hong Kong.
There you go. I'm happy for either.
I need to make a trip to Asia. It's been
awesome.
A while.
So, thank you for your time.
Yeah. We'll stay in touch. Maybe there's a way.